Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, December 8th, back to our regular scheduled dates. And, yeah, John, who was number one in your Spotify Wrapped this year?
All right. I had, as an artist, was The Killers. Yep. Still.
And, I love it.
Okay. And then, number one, song is a song called Red Hearse by the band Red Hearse. The whole album's amazing. Just shout out to them. How about you?
Major respect. You're way cooler than I am. Mine was a DJ by the name of Porter Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out he was supposed to be putting out a new album this summer, his first one in several years. And then, COVID hit. So he didn't, but before COVID hit, he released like two or three new songs. And he has one called, Something Comforting, which was really good. And so that was my number one song. And then I've also realized in looking through that, like, I have so much music that I'm just going to listen to every year a lot forever. Cause there were like four songs in my top 10 that came out like no earlier than 3 or 4 years ago or no later than I suppose. And you know, that's okay. I'm okay with, like, to your point, The Killers, if it's good music, it's good music.
You know, you're probably sitting there wondering if you have the right podcasts queued up because we're talking about music. There is a reason. And we want to thank those folks who managed to get The Only Podcast in their top pods for Spotify's 2020 Wrapped. I'm going to thank you individually. Thank you to everyone who's been listening to us this entire year. It's been an odd year. We're pumped that we were along for all the ride for at least part of it with you guys. But shout outs go to specifically longtime fan and our dear friend, Sarah G on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sarah. Arpan Lobo, awesome. Thank you so much for listening and also for tweeting us and keeping us in line. Marissa, I think I'm going to get this right, Rouge, or it could be Rug. And as she knows, as a longtime listener, I am terrible at pronouncing anyone's names regardless. So she takes that as a compliment. Robert Stefanik also keeps us incredibly honest on the Twitter and finds and shares with us the best punting out there in the wide world of football, so we appreciate that. Jason Schwager, probably said that name wrong again. Thank you for listening, and again, take it as a compliment for getting it wrong. Number one Water fan Nick Nickley saved my life last week. I was playing Good Rocket, Bad Rocket, and things got a little out of hand. He reminded me to have a drink of water, and that was a really, really good thing for me because it was a school night. I was getting a little out of control. I have a newborn now. I can't be acting like this. So thank you, Nick. And finally, thanks to One Cool Nate, who is, believe, shipping off here in service of our great nation. So thank you, Nate, for always listening, and good luck and safe travels to you.
Yes, the huge I echo all of those sentiments from you, John. Nate, wherever you are, hope you're staying safe, and looking forward to hearing where you're listening from. But seriously, thank you from everyone. I know we like to joke around here on the pod, but it is pretty flattering, you know, to hear and see that we're, you know, people actually listen to our stupid ramblings from time to time. So it's nice. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Hey, listen, John, there were some sports last week.
Let's do it.
The main one was the men's basketball team. As you guys heard on our emergency pod, we didn't really get into the big win of the three last week, but we're going to get to there now. Michigan State, last Tuesday, I believe, went on the road and won in Cameron Indoor Stadium for the first time under Tom Izzo.
You know,
you don't know the team that plays there? That's Duke. John, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know it's a fun game, an important game when, unbeknownst to me, the basketball game goes to a media timeout, and I find myself laying on the floor, and I don't know how I got there. Found myself doing that in this game a few times. Gutty win. couldn't have stuck. But if you remember, and this was, feels like ages ago, there couldn't have been a worse start to this game, Austin.
Oh my God! Yeah,
they came out lost. And
it felt like one of those. It feels like every year, you know, MSU plays such a ridiculous schedule at the beginning of every single basketball season. But it seems like every year, though, there's one where you come out and it's usually against Duke, just like it was in this game a year ago, where you just dump your pants just right away. And you're like, okay, well, we're not going to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to get frisky in the second half, bring it to within single digits, and then give up like back-to-back threes and lose. And it feels like that happens once a year. And it's funny. I was talking to a couple people before this one tipped off, and everyone's like, yep, this is the one. This is where that happens. And yeah, John, to your point, to the first, I want to call it 10 minutes of this game, I mean, it was some of the uglier basketball that you're going to see, period, this year.
The thing that was most confusing is, and I know it was only two games prior, but Michigan State had shared the ball so well. And then, you know, the first 4 minutes of this game, it was like just the ball stuck. It was all ISO shots. And frankly, it was just kind of like, what are we doing here? Kind of playing Duke's game. Duke played their standard, you know, full court, pick you up, man-to-man defense that kind of had Michigan State shaken a bit. Rocket Watts looked like he didn't really know how to run an offense, which is understandable. The kid never really had to. Never did it in high school. He played for Spire Academy. As we talked about many times, his teammate was LaMelo Ball, and to be honest, they didn't run a lot of offense, didn't need to. And frankly, if Rocket passed the ball, you might not get it back when he was in high school. So, you know, now he comes to a program like Michigan State, and, you know, he had a grace year where he got to come in and just kind of be a microwave. And then all of a sudden, you know, Cassius Winston is gone, and people are saying, hey, buddy, here are the keys to the Lambo. You know, you got to figure it out, pal. And it's a tough transition. And, you know, at the beginning, he looks like he was uncomfortable with it. He's more comfortable playing kind of his own game, which is, you know, it's just score on your own will, which is he's one of the better one-on-one players we've ever seen for Michigan right. State. But yeah, facilitating the ball, getting everyone else involved, not one of his core strengths right now, which is okay. But what we did learn is when Rocket was struggling at the beginning there, Foster Lawyer came in and everyone held their breath like we had in years past. And he was more than serviceable in this game as a backup point guard, which is, I think, for Austin, exactly what everyone is just hoping he can provide against upper level competition.
Yeah, I think what we've learned, and, you know, obviously we're going to talk about the other games that happened this week, but Duke being the biggest learning opportunity, I think we learned kind of pretty concretely that Foster is going to be able to get you net neutral minutes at a minimum. Now, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if you see a bunch of lines from Foster throughout the year where it's, you know, 12 minutes, not a ton of points, maybe a couple assists, but the bottom line is he's not the liability out there that I think we've seen, certainly previous years from him and from other like random down depth chart MSU players, specifically like ones and twos, I feel like throughout the years. I mean, you're talking like the popular name is always the Mike Keebler, but I even think of like a Colby Wollenman, like those names that started out. And, you know, when they first had to play, it was just like, oh, God, I hope this guy's not a, you know, every minute you are able to play with him not screwing up is like a win. And I think that's how people probably felt, you know, with Foster in there. But I think what we've learned is that, you know, now that he just seems to have a better understanding of what he needs to do to be successful in it, whether that's shoot the open shot against a zone, which you saw him do in this game a couple times. He made a three. Or it's just continue to really facilitate more than anything else, which we've seen him do very well. Make free throws at the end. I mean, he's not going to be even a top eight reason why this team is really good, but that doesn't make him unimportant. And, you know, against Duke, but listen, I don't think this is a vintage Duke team. John, I think you would agree with that, but. Mm-hmm. You still went on the road to Cameron Indoor. You still held up against top 30 recruits. I mean, you still did something impressive here, Foster. And if you're a Michigan State fan, you can come away from that game feeling pretty good about his performance, even though it might not jump off the stat sheet.
So a couple takeaways, you know, just to kind of – we've watched him grow up. Last year, and again, we're five games in, but this is a guy who was playing 7.5 minutes last year, and everyone, as I mentioned, was on pins and needles during those 7.5 minutes. This year, you know, he's graduated to well over that. You know, now he's at 18 minutes a game. And I granted there have been four games that have been against lesser, I guess you would call it, three games against lesser competition. So this number will go down a bit. But he's going to end up averaging well over double minutes per game, which is a godsend. And I think the most important part, like you said, you know, he's averaging a 4-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. That's incredible. That's not sustainable, but the fact that it's there, that's all you're really asking for. Just get other people involved. That's it.
Yep.
And don't be a liability on defense.
Yeah. And listen, he's never going to be an amazing individual one-on-one defender, but you saw moments in this game where, you know, we saw it against Notre Dame where, and I think we can expect to see it quite a bit throughout this season, where bigger guards, Prentice Hubb for Notre Dame, really posted him up and took advantage of his size. Again, we will see that quite a bit throughout the season, but you saw him fighting really hard against some of these guards that were trying to do that against him. For Duke. And I just think that at a minimum, like we talk about this with the football team where it's like, if you can just do the basics, anything above that is almost gravy. And I kind of look at it the same way with Foster, where it's like, if you are just a net neutral, you are keeping the ball moving, you are fighting as hard as you can on defense and taking the shots when they're there, not pressing, just being smart, communicating that type of basic level basketball stuff. That's all MSU could ever possibly ask for, really out of any backup point guard, but especially one who, you know, we've seen some limitations from in the past. So yeah, huge credit to Foster for the way that he fought in this one. I think another massive win for Michigan State was having, uncovering the fact that Julius Marble is maybe a lot more ready to play, minutes than we would have thought coming into the year. I think coming into the year, you know, that 4-5 rotation was obviously, I think still is pretty up in the air, but Julius Marble may be the one piece that everyone's kind of like, you know, if you get some nice minutes out of him, you get some nice minutes out of him, great. We saw way, way, way more aptitude from him than just, hey, if you get minutes out of him in this game. I mean, he made a baseline jumper. He had a couple emphatic blocks. I was really more than anything impressed with his individual defense on some of Duke's bigs. He's able to switch and kind of guard just about anybody. And listen, we've talked about it. That front court rotation still has a lot to work out. But having a weapon like that as coming into the year as your fourth, fifth big,
right?
That's a nice thing to find.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's what happened with Julius. He came in and he introduced Jalen Johnson to Power 5 basketball. And Jalen Johnson, he's going to be a stud. He's going to play in the NBA. He's going to be really good, frankly. But Julius Marble came in and kind of big boyed him. And I think kind of shocked him. And I think, you know, the reason we're spending so much time on these role players is because that's going to be the difference for this team. You know, like we're going to line up with a lot of top 10 teams this year. And the starters are going to be pretty, you know, talent for talent, pretty equal. How do you, like, where's your advantage? And I think Michigan State's advantage is not just its depth, but figuring out the rotation and this depth. How good can it be? Julius Marble came in, big boy Jalen Johnson, out of the paint. So much so that Johnson had 4 rebounds. I think if you listen to this last podcast we had, in his first game, he had 19. So he got completely moved out. And for the record, Foster Lawyer out-rebounded Jalen Johnson, which on its own is just an amazing statistic.
Fantastic.
Fantastic stat. And, you know, it's not just Julius Marble who had a really nice game. I think Malik Hall will be forever underappreciated at Michigan State. He just simply seems to come in and be a minute, you know, it's positive minutes all the time.
I think that this game against Duke was a really good matchup for Malik, or I think it really shows off. Again, we're talking about the role players, but that's what separates this team, I think, from a lot of others in the country, is that it's not just that they have so many different pieces, but they're experienced pieces. And Malik Hall, I mean, as a sophomore, you know, in college basketball, you're basically elderly at that point if you're a sophomore, it seems like. So this is a great matchup for him because he has that experience. And really, like, he's a – a slightly bigger version of Aaron Henry in terms of what his role is defensively, where he can kind of play, you know, he's thick enough where he can get down and guard a center if he has to, but he's quick enough that he can guard anything up through a wing if need be. And this Duke team was one of those that doesn't necessarily have traditional players at any spot aside from maybe Matthew Hurt as the four. But outside of that, you know, Hall's ability to hang with just about anybody on the boards, make a couple jump shots, fight hard on defense and switch, you know, I think made a big difference in this game. And you're right. I think when it's funny because when you go nine deep, there's a lot of praise that has to go around when the team plays well. And maybe that's why Malik will be underrated, because there's just a lot of praise to go around. And he somehow manages to fly under the radar still, despite being obviously a major asset to the team.
Well, and part of it is because, you know, Malik Hall's a quiet stat stuffer. Aaron Henry is also a quiet stat stuffer, but does it at an even higher rate. You know, he's got potential All-American written all over him, and we're not even near his potential. You know, he's still not shooting the ball very well. But I mean, like, you're looking at a guy who had a, right now, already, he's averaging 12 points, 6 rebounds, over 5 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks a game. Like, that's just, I mean, that is everything you can want out of a player. And he's doing it playing 30 minutes a game. And so, you know, this, and he hasn't reached his potential yet. I'm really excited to see how much more Aaron Henry can grow. Because as he goes, also, you know, guarding other teams' best players sometimes.
Yeah.
And switching on everything, that's important. It's so nice to have in a world of chaos a constant like Aaron Henry. So, you know, here's some weird stuff that happened that also I wanted to bounce off you. This is the first game I can remember in some time where Tom Izzo was willingly playing somebody with 2 first half fouls. He did that with Joey Hodges. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked, very pleased, but shocked. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't even realize it was happening until I think you texted me about it. But I love it. I mean, it's weird to say about a coach who's into his 60s, but it seems like he's turning a new leaf in a way. Mm-hmm. And maybe more than anything, I think it speaks to how important, especially right now, Joey Hauser is to the success of this team, especially offensively. I mean, you saw it really even more in the later 2 games in the week, but it just what he brings from an offensive perspective from that position is something that MSU, I mean, I don't really know even last time they really had that. I suppose it would be Draymond or Adrian Payne in a way, but what Hauser does is just so much more modern, I think, than either of them in a way. Like he's a much more fluid athlete than Payne, and he's a much better shooter than Draymond was, even though, you know, Draymond obviously shot the ball very well, but Hauser's just a little bit different when it comes to that. So what he provides to this team, and really what in a way a lot of the other bigs lack, is just that dynamism to what he does offensively. And I thought it was pretty, you know, it's funny because, and we'll talk about it with the Detroit game specifically, but Izzo likes to play these games. Like I have this, you know, we have this running joke that he would rather, like, he intentionally tanks some of these games sometimes early in the season to create the narrative of like being underrated and keeping his guys hungry and all that stuff. And I do think there's some truth to that, but this would fly in the face of that reasoning because, you know, if you wanted to create a more difficult situation for your team, it would have been very easy to do so by sitting Hauser on the bench here. So I think it shows how badly Izzo wanted to win this one and how highly he values what Hauser can do. And I got to say, the 2 guys we just mentioned, Henry and Hauser, it's their team. I mean, it's also Rocket Watts' team, but like those 2 guys, I think you're talking about 2 potential, like, first team All Big Ten type of players. I mean, that's the caliber that we're getting. And I'll be honest, like, what I've seen out of Joey Hauser is so much more impressive. And I know there was all the hype. I always try to not buy into it, in, you know, when it comes to some of that stuff. But I think it was undersold at this point. And so was the development of Aaron Henry. I mean, his step forward has been incredible. So, I mean, these 2 guys are, I think the reason why Michigan State is, you know, maybe not surprising to this point in the year, but climbing the rankings as opposed to us asking questions about, you know, what are they going to be in the future.
So Austin, this Duke game, the only watch out I had, and it's hard to nitpick when you beat Duke on the road, even without fans.
Right.
But that's our agreed. That's what we do. And it was the third game in a row where Michigan State had kind of played the opponent's game and beat them at it, which is great to be able to beat someone at their own game. But it reminded me a lot of that Miles and Jaren Jackson team that beat everybody at their own game, but never had their own identity. And that had bad consequences. And I said, well, I'm just going to file that one away. And maybe it was, you know, it's just been three games. Moving on to the Detroit Mercy game, Michigan State absolutely played Detroit into Detroit Mercy's hands. They played Detroit's game. They played frankly, a money ball game. There was no rhyme or rhythm. And I'll say it. This team came out fat and sassy, Austin.
Yes. It's that Tom Izzo-ism, baby.
A Tom Izzo-ism. And, and, you know, frankly, they just were lucky enough that those games are built for Rocket, the walking bucket Watts. But he rescued them. He did it. So that was just kind of frustrating, I think. And it's okay to have letdowns. That's not the issue. The letdowns happen. But I think for me, it's like, I don't see Michigan State running an offense. Like, I don't see them adjusting. I don't see anyone stepping up as a captain right now and getting their heads on straight. So that was my frustration.
Yeah, I mean, it's an understandable frustration. I mean, this was a frustrating game to watch. But, you know, where you are saying, oh, this just worked out perfectly for Rocket and you know, Memphis is not playing kind of, quote unquote, their game. I think what he brings to the table is the ability for MSU to get out of their comfort zone and do those things without having to just out talent you, which is what I think those Jaren and Miles teams did. They were just two lottery picks like that. Right. That was just, it's what Kentucky does a lot and is not able to do this year, but is what they do a lot. Is they're like, yeah, we're just way more talented than you. Like, that's what that MSU team did. This MSU team isn't talented enough to do that. They're much more of a team, but Rocket Watts individually, I think, is capable of taking over a game when he, I think we've seen that from him a couple times already this year. I mean, he, going back to Duke, he had 20 points against Duke. I mean, he played quite well. I mean, in Detroit, he, you know, it's funny because during that Detroit game, I tweeted out something where it was like, Izzo would rather send a message to Rocket than win this game. You know, that's where the whole Izzo tanking, games theory came back into play. And I, you know, he did. He sat him down for long stretches of time and tried to see what happened. And then Rocket, you know, again, to his credit, came back, saw what needed to be done and went out and did it. And I, listen, you don't want to rely on that by any stretch, but the ability, the fact that they have a guy who can do that is something that Michigan State just doesn't have every year. So I think that's great. I will say one of the things that concerned me again, not only against Duke, but against Western was it's not just Rocket, but sometimes this offense, it's clearly early in the season because they're just not humming, the way that you're used to seeing them the last few years in terms of passing the ball. Now, I think the beautiful thing is that that's just a time thing. Like, you're just early in the season because that's their identity. They're going to have to share the ball. Otherwise, you know, listen, they've got more individual guys who can do it than they usually do. But if they want to win big, and I'm sure they do, they're going to have to get back to that Cassius-like level of sharing the ball. That's just to happen. And I agree. Like, if you're not going to go do that and you're just going to try to out talent people, you're going to lose some games you shouldn't lose.
So you mentioned Rocket, who was being taken aside, and in his place, AJ, Hogman, the Hog Dog,
the
came
Hog
in
Daddy.
His place and played more minutes in this game than I believe all the other four games this year combined. Really thrown into the fire. He was okay. Didn't handle it incredibly well. This was a grow-up game, and those are allowed, and that's why you play, you know, teams like Detroit and Oakland and Western Michigan, so you can grow up folks that maybe wouldn't have the opportunity against Duke, Notre Dame, Virginia. this was AJ's opportunity. I would say he didn't flinch. He was okay. But we definitely were watching someone grow in real time. The other person that we watched take a big leap and not be afraid of, well, he's never been afraid of taking the jumper. Gabe Brown came in 4 for 6 from three. And the best part about Gabe Brown is he does two things. He's going to shoot three pointers and he might come and contest on defense. But he's had 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals. He's just no interest in doing anything but launching from deep and meeting you at the rim on the defensive end. And I kind of admire it.
He's taking 3-and-D very literally when it comes to his role. But I got to say, when I look at any of these three games, like, kind of my big takeaways, two of them we just covered off on. First, I think Rocket really does look like a point guard now. You could see him grow, especially through these last two games. I thought get a little more comfortable with the playmaking as opposed to just taking his own shot. So I thought some real progress last week in that. And the other one was that in terms of the shooting, that Duke game was not just a blip for Gabe Brown because he came out – or no, the Duke game was the blip for Gabe Brown. Because if you look at his box scores, the other games, you know, he's got 12 points, 9 points, 16 points, 7 points. He's shooting, you know, almost 48% from three. And that includes a night where he went 0 for against Duke. And I think he was probably the most disappointing part of that entire game. But it looks like that was the blip as opposed to being the norm. And I think for a guy like Gabe Brown, who you're relying on, like you said, really for a very specific skill set, that's kind of a big deal. And again, I think that you've seen him kind of take a step forward in his consistency. I don't know that his role is necessarily grown in terms of like what he's being asked to do or anything like that. But people are just, I think, if anything, saying just shoot it better than you did last year and you're going to be a great part of this team. And it's nice to see him doing that. My other big takeaway from this was that in terms of the concern, and Gabe sort of plays into this, but that the guard defense worries me a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, in years past, you would look at this roster maybe and think, wow, Rocket Watts, Josh Langford, like if you take that at face value, those are two really good defenders. But, you know, the reality of the situation is Rocket Watts is still a good defender. I wouldn't call him a great individual defender. He's still limited size. You know, he's only 6'1", so a bigger guard's going to have an advantage against him. And then Josh Langford at this point, you can't count on him for anything more than like slightly above pedestrian defense. I mean, like replacement level defense. He just is not moving the same way that he once did defensively. I think, you know, when you have those ankle injuries or really any type of lower leg injury or knee injury, like the lateral quickness is the part that's scary and where that's really going to come to roost. And that again, kind of is highlighted on the defensive end. So, you know, Josh hopefully is going to improve, but if he doesn't, I think a very real concern for this team is that guard defense because, you know, Foster's not going to bring you tons, so you're not getting that off the bench. A.J. Hoggard is, you know, hopefully something that can evolve into playing. I was pretty optimistic on Hoggard, especially offensively. I think he's going to be pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. He's just really decisive. I like his size. But defensively, you know, you can't expect a ton out of him. So where's your answer? You know, where is that answer coming from? Aaron Henry can only defend three people at once. You're still going to have some leftovers. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how that gets solved. That was probably one of the two really big red flags that jumped out at me from these games.
Well, the third red flag is that, you know, you get a scare against Detroit Mercy. Did you have an off night? Were you not focused? You know, insert reason here, and you still pulled off a win. You would think that because of that, Western Michigan would have had Michigan State's full attention, and they didn't, and they came out flat again, and that was disappointing. Now they did win by 18. I believe the spread was 19, so brutal if you bet on that. But they came out flat, and that's the frustrating part because you don't get to, you can only come out flat so many times. You did it against Duke. You did it against Detroit, and you did it against Western. I mean, at what point do you say to yourself, you know, this can't happen anymore? You know, let's stop putting ourselves in the holes here. This is just stupid.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very real concern. And again, it's one that, you know, I think everyone's hoping can be written off to the early season no fans stuff. But at the end of the day, like, at a certain point, you are what you are. And I think that's something that we discover every single college basketball season over and over again, is that it's only a tendency for a while, and then it just becomes your identity. And I think MSU's had this weird identity. This isn't the first year. This isn't even the first year recently. I feel like this has happened. This happened with Cassius Winston all the time, where you'd come out and kind of be lazy and sloppy and turn the ball over, and just kind of, that's just sort of who you were. And then you buckled up and tightened things up and won games. It's disconcerting early on that this is happening, because listen, as good as I think this team is, that's going to cost you games. That's the type of stuff, dumb minutes, dumb mistakes, dumb turnovers, like that. That's what costs you games against good teams in what's going to be a very good conference. So definitely another trend that, you know, listen, there's plenty of opportunities to correct it, including tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, against a very, very good, well, maybe not a very, very good, but a good program in Virginia. So opportunities to correct, but, you know, games against good teams, you can only start slow so many times. So I'm with you. It's a concern. There was a couple other things that popped out at me in terms of concerns against lower level competition too.
So let me set you up here, because I think we're on the same page with that. I think part of the issue is, you know, Tom is still trying to figure out who his starting five is, you know, and I think, you know, it's been pretty solidified. Aaron Henry, I don't believe, started against Western. I don't think that's a thing.
Nope.
But trying to figure out, you know, what can give this team the boost and energy, you know, like what is the five that's going to get these guys, you know, running out of the gates, you know, hair on fire. And frankly, I'm not sure if Marcus Bingham is that guy, because two things happen. Titus Wright, Western Michigan center, 6'8", all 6'8" of him, who averaged 6 points, 4 rebounds last year, had 16 and 10. And that wasn't just against Bingham. You know, that was against the center position for Michigan State. That's a huge red flag. And I think the issue is, you know, you have four nice players at the center that can play the center position for Michigan State. All of them have strengths. All of them have glaring weaknesses. And, you know, you got to figure out which ones, you know, what are you rolling with? You know, and that's what Tom and Dwayne Stevens, you know, kind of have to figure out. You know, Marcus Bingham, he is an elite, and I mean like elite 99th percentile shot blocker in the country. In fact, he averages a block for every 7 minutes and 38 seconds of gameplay, which is incredible. You didn't expect a block from him before the under 12 media timeout if he plays the whole time. But what else do you bring to the table? So, you know, I think you had some thoughts on, you know, that position in general, and frankly, what has to happen if Michigan State takes it, you know, from the fourth gear to the fifth?
Yeah, and Bingham is the one who's going to catch the wrath on this one. Like you said, this isn't to say that, you know, he's this lost cause or he shouldn't play at all or anything like that. But here's my issue with Marcus Bingham. We know what he can do really well. We know he's an elite shot blocker. That's great. We know he has all the tools. He shot really well from three his freshman year. We've seen no improvement in really any facet of his game, realistically, any facet of his game since his freshman year. I think it's time. And it's not only time because your team could really use it to be time, but it's time because you have guys behind you now that are very capable, that have very high floors, and that are good at things that you're not good at, or at least maybe you're good at in practice and are not good at in actual games against real competition. And this isn't a middle of the road Big Ten program. This isn't a MAC team. This isn't Division II. This is Michigan State. This is a team that has won back-to-back-to-back Big Ten regular season titles and is looking to do it for a fourth time. This is a team that is ranked in the top five, that is really your piece away from being one of the three to four best teams with legitimate number one seed, legitimate regular season championship, and legitimate national championship aspirations. You are that missing piece. You are arguably the most important piece of this entire puzzle. It's time to play like it. You're great at one thing. The other part of it, you're 7 feet tall and you're getting one rebound against Western Michigan. That to me would, if I'm Tom Izzo, I'm putting that guy on the pine. I cannot abide by Titus Wright posting up my 7-footer and scoring on him in the paint. I just can't have that. So it's either time to buckle up and figure this out, which means if you got to foul him, figure out a way to block his shot, figure out a way to front him, figure out a way to do something. But at this point, if there's not another step taken, specifically defensively, like I don't even think he needs to do anything offensively. Last night against Western, I think he ended up with 8 points on 4 dunks. That's fine. Offensively, I don't think anybody should have any issue with him setting picks, rolling to the rim, and rim running on fast breaks. That's all he needs to do and not turn the ball over. Offensively, he doesn't even have to do anything. You just have to be a more complete defender. It seems like he should be this elite weak side defender, and yet guys back cut him all the time. He can't defend an individual post up against inferior talent. And it blows with any consistency. It blows my mind. He did a great job against Durham, I thought, from Notre Dame. And then the next 3 games, he's nowhere to be seen. So the level of consistency from Marcus Bingham needs to go up if this team is going to reach its ceiling. Now, there are other players that I think keep the floor really high, like a Julius Marble, for example, a Thomas Kithier. And I'm not even a Kithier fan per se, but you know he's going to be a garbage man and he's going to do, you know, high effort stuff and defend well in the post. Marble, I think, has a chance to be that plus. And offensively, Marble can hit a jump shot, which is something none of the other bigs aside from Joey Hauser can say. Maddie Sissoko, I think, is just a little too raw. But to that point, between Bingham and Sissoko, where's the line? I mean, like, technically, I realize that Bingham's got experience and he has that elite shot blocking trait. But if you think you can get more out of Maddie Sissoko as an individual defender, at a certain point, it's worth exploring that route. And that's only going to happen if Bingham forces the hand. If he is still so clearly ineffective as an individual and team defender that he forces Tom Izzo's hand to explore that. And now, before I hand it back to you, John, I know the advanced analytics are saying that he is this plus defender and all these things. Those numbers, as you confirmed to me, as our resident numbers guy, are heavily influenced by these block shots. It's like a 180 hitter that hits 50 bombs and has 50 RBIs in a year. It's like, oh, cool, you hit 50 homers, but you also hit 10%, not 180, 100. You hit 10% of the balls that came your way. You're an ineffective player, ultimately. And that's, to me, what Marcus Bingham is. And I don't want to, you know, say that he should never play again, but like you're an 8 minute a game guy at this point in time. And if people expect more or say, why isn't Bingham playing? It's because he's not good at any of the other parts of the game right now. There's my rant, John.
It was healthy. I think we grew together.
It's all good.
And, you know, just to hammer home your point, I think this team gets much better if Marcus Bingham is playing at a higher clip, and how to do that is becoming a stronger rebounder, a more effective defender outside of blocking shots. You know, we can't keep yanking him out of games because Tom is upset he didn't hedge hard enough on the pick and roll again. That's back to Nick Ward, you know, sophomore year stuff. You know, we can't play that game. You know, Marcus Bingham, 7th on the team in total rebounds per 40 minutes. It can't happen. AJ Hogdog can't be better. Steven Izzo can't have nearly the same total rebounds per 40 minutes as you. Can't happen. Yeah. Can't happen. So, you know, that's the way to our hearts. You know, if he can start to become a more complete player, and you're going to start to see, cause like you said, Kithier is who he is. And, you know, you love him for it. You mentioned Julius Marble has been a wonderful surprise. He can take – it's his job to take at this point. You know, you can only give Bingham so many more shots. He got every start last year. You know, everyone wants him to take the leap. It's got to happen. Big opportunity to do that, you know, against Virginia here. A team
– Absolutely.
A team that – is the third best defense in the country, 17th in KenPom, one of the more confounding teams in all of basketball, not just this year, but any year. I think I said to you, Austin, can you imagine being a fan of a program that on literally any given night, not just like a random thing could happen, but on any given night, your team could beat anyone and also literally lose to anyone that's above like a 300 KenPom rating? That is Virginia basketball because of the style they play.
I don't think that I could do it. I don't think I'm strong enough mentally. I can barely do what I do now. And that is a significantly lower risk for mind melding upset. I think the way I always look at Virginia basketball is you really have to love basketball to watch Virginia. You gotta love the game of basketball, maybe even specifically the game of college basketball, because based on the style of basketball that they play, there's a very high floor, but there's also like a really low ceiling. Like there's just such a small margin for error because this is one of those games where, like you said, Marcus Bingham has an opportunity to take a major step forward because this team and pad his stats, if nothing else, because Virginia doesn't really rebound. And it's funny because you would think with a program like theirs that's so grounded in individual and team defense that you would think this team's going to just dominate the glass. It's kind of wild because they really just don't even try, specifically on the offensive end. Like they have a total through four games this year against not good competition. And mind you, with a ton of size on their roster, they have 27 offensive rebounds. That is less than half. Well, no, just more than half than Michigan State has through five games, including a game against Duke. Like that is a crazy stat. They're very much a one and done team. They're going to try to get one shot and then they're just going to bail back and play defense. They're not even necessarily interested in offensive rebounds in a way. So that I think severely limits your ceiling as a basketball team. And I don't know, man, if I'm a Virginia fan, I think I would just hate it so much.
You know, it's interesting. But it's a long It's you say that and they take that one shot, but it's a really, really efficient shot. They're shooting 57% from effective field goal this year, which is damn good. And they really don't turn the ball over. You know, that's kind of their MO, right? So they're going to pass it around until they get a good one, and they're going to make sure there's you're going to take away the fast break from not just Michigan State, but anybody. They do have size. Their two best players are very large individuals. Jay Huff, a senior 7'1", that's going to test Marcus Bingham probably right out of the gate. And then Joey Hauser's brother, Sam, 6'8", senior, who's playing very well. And then the third best player might be Trey Murphy III, who's 6'9". So they don't lack for size. It's just they're using it not on the offensive glass. So, Virginia, you all know the story. They lost to the 16 seed. Very next year, they won the national championship. This year, a lot more of the same. They lost to the San Francisco Dons, who might be a little bit better than you think, but – still San Francisco.
It's still San Francisco.
Who I should note has more national championships than Virginia. So I'm just going to put that out there. And then they have an OT win over Kent State most recently. So it's just a lot of question marks. You know, like what team are you going to get here? As I mentioned, I think if you watch this game, you're going to see they play something called a pack line defense. And so what they're going to do is it's something that's actually was carried over from Wisconsin. And so what they do, they're going to funnel you to the middle of the floor where there's everyone is there to help and creates a lot of problems. You might see Aaron Henry struggle with that. Aaron Henry's gotten a lot better at his step, which is fantastic, because last year he would take a dribble and kind of freak out, get lost and not really know where to go next. That Eurostep has done wonders for him. Dribbling to the middle here is a fool's errand, and that's exactly what they want you to do. So we'll see how Michigan State handles the dribble drive. But if they're able to dribble drive and kick, this is has a Gabe Brown game written all over it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that this one really too is, you know, it's the Hauser Bowl, but specifically I think Joey is in line for a really big role in this game because corner threes are one of the more effective shots against this defense, as are just threes in general. Driving the ball, again, not something that you're going to be able to do a ton. I think one of the big keys here is, A, if you're efficient in your shot making, you're always, especially from range, you're going to have a chance against Virginia. And then the second thing is hit the offensive glass, because they're not going to do a ton of offensive rebounding against you. So if you're able to do it against them, that's big time difference in a place where you could pick up points on them. I think the really interesting thing will be, like you said, MSU's not going to be able to get on the fast break. We've seen it this year and the few previous years. That's where they do some really, really good work. I mean, we've seen Aaron Henry be effective as someone leading that. We've seen Hauser be effective and obviously Rocket Watts. This will be a big test of how they can actually execute their offense. And I think if they can just continue, like you said previously, pass the ball efficiently, be those, you know, share it as much as possible to as many guys as possible and be efficient, it kind of plays into their hands a little bit. But, you know, this is one where if Rocket Watts, if we get bad Rocket, this one could not go our way.
So you're absolutely right. I believe we'll probably be favored in Vegas for this game, but it'll be, as you can imagine, a lower scoring game, probably high 50s, low 60s. So strap in those, just like those old Wisconsin games where every possession seemingly matters, which is great. I think there's a takeaway. One good note is that this Michigan State team is turning the ball over at a better clip than in years past. They've only had one really bad game so far as turnovers go. 18 against Eastern, which was terrible. 17 against Detroit, that was not really a true game as much as we mentioned, a track meet. So Virginia is not going to play that way, but they are going to try and turn you over in a more conventional manner. So Michigan State limits the turnovers. They have a pretty good shot of handling this one, in my opinion. So I'm really excited for that one. Again, another marquee matchup for Michigan State in the non-conference. And before you know it, you know, after this, the game after against Oakland, we're hitting conference season, Austin.
I know. It's insane. It's exciting, especially because the Big Ten looks so good. It'll be a very fun season, but it is kind of insane. Before we jump ahead to Oakland, to me, this Virginia game is a big maturity test for this team. And, you know, listen, it's a lot of upperclassmen, so they should be able to answer the call. But how do you bounce back after two, you know, slightly disappointing games? Can you stay disciplined in your approach? Because there's a very specific way to play to beat Virginia. And this team's equipped to do it. It's just, can you answer that call? Can you play with that same type of grit and determination that you found, especially later on against Duke, you know, in that kind of after the first 10 minutes? If so, I think they got a really good chance to win this game. But like you said, next game up is Oakland. I think it's fair to say they're not great. They're coming into this one ranked a less than stellar 0-6, not ranked, but you know, they are 0-6. But we've seen glimpses from Greg Campy's team this year where they look pretty darn competent. And then there's some games where you're just like, whoa, what is going on here? Specifically, they took Michigan to overtime and they lost to OK State by only 13. Oklahoma State, who happens to have the odds on favorite for the number one overall draft pick next year in Cade Cunningham. Not a bad team by any stretch. And they were tied with 11 minutes to go. And yet they also have games where they go out and lose by 52 to Xavier, 43 to Purdue, 27 to Toledo. So I think the main question, John, is what Oakland team shows up. My bet would be the good one, because that just seems to be what happens when MSU plays Oakland.
Well,
and by good, I mean not abysmal.
There it is. Yeah. Michigan State always seems to get Oakland's best shot, and we would have it no other way. Their best player this year is Jalen Moore, another really small guard, 5'11", 155, who seemingly have been having a lot of success against Michigan State. So he's averaging 15 points a game, but almost nearly four turnovers. So there's this huge opportunity there. Mika Parrish is 6'6", 180. He's averaging 5 points a game, but he's the leading rebounder at just under six rebounds a game. So again, he's 6'6", and he's the leading rebounder on the team. If Michigan State doesn't dominate the glass here, you know, at a certain point, there's going to be maybe a week's worth straight of putting on the pads and doing the war drill. I mean, there's just no excuse. So, yeah, Michigan State should be a heavy favorite in this game. Wouldn't anticipate, I mean, probably over 20, maybe 25. But Michigan State showed they weren't able to handle it against Detroit. And then again with Western Michigan. So, you know, see if they have their full attention on this one too.
Yeah, I mean, so just to sum it up for this week in general to me is – we talked about him a lot already, but this is a big week for a guy like Marcus Bingham and these other dudes in the front court because you have two very specific opportunities. Like your opportunity against Virginia is, you know, bang with them and don't make dumb mistakes. And if you can show up and play, you know, the way you're supposed to play defensively and then offensively, if you can get, I mean, I think the difference in that game could be three offensive rebounds. I mean, that's really what that game could come down to based on just the style they play and the fact that they are a really talented and big team. But, then you've got this game against Oakland, which is the other side of the coin where it's like, you should really show out and dominate that game. Like let's not play, you know, listen, I love Greg Campy. Love what he's done for that program and the state and all the great games we've played against each other. It's not a good team. It's not a great rebounding team. You should go out and dominate that game. And if they're able to do that, I think we're all going to feel a lot better come Big Ten regular season, which, like you said, is right around the corner. But this is a big opportunity for them. I think it's again, another opportunity for Rocket Watts, too. I mean, I think he's probably the guy that I look at in this Virginia game specifically as the one that can either make it go real good or real bad, because if you get, he loves those little bit, you know, floaters from the middle of the paint. Those are not good. If you're taking those shots, Virginia's winning. Like they're winning the game plan if it's a bunch of rocket floaters. So, and he shows a propensity to take them against teams that don't even consider that winning. So, I think big opportunity for him. And you know, big opportunity for Joey. Go out and get the best of your brother and get a dub on the books.
Yeah, big weekend or week for the Hauser family as a whole. I'm glad they already had Thanksgiving, so it could have been ugly. Folks, let's take a commercial break, and we'll come back and preview a football weekend to forget. But some also fun stuff happened, too, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, all right. Here we go. And we're back.
Hello.
Unfortunately.
So if you stayed with the entire Saturday afternoon game, Michigan State lost 52-12, which, sure, 12 points feels right. it was, by all stretches of the word, bad. And that was – Michigan State was overmatched in almost all areas. We will point out some good things. There were a couple good things. Antoine Simmons is good. I will say okay. That. He had 12 tackles. And two tackles for a loss. Michael Fletcher, a great bright spot. Two sacks, two tackles for a loss. You know, I think that's it.
Yeah. Wow. Way to go there, John. I'll give one other shout out.
Okay.
I was impressed by Peyton Thorne. Okay. I know he threw one bad pick, and I know it didn't matter that he was good because the team sucked, but I think we've seen enough. First of all, I hope Rocky Lombardi's okay. He had absolutely no idea where he was after he got hit that one time. Mm-hmm. That sent him out of the game. But I think we've seen enough. I think we saw, you know, consistently throughout the season what we needed to see from Rocky Lombardi. It's the, you know, we got at least two games left. I think it's time for Mel Tucker to give Peyton Thorne the green light. Cause it's not like he came in and this team was still completely and totally inept. He put together a handful of nice drives. It looked like they almost changed the entire offense when he came in to start running some, you know, more shallow crossers and just completable passes. And like, listen, I don't know if that's an indictment of Rocky or an indictment of the offensive coordinator, but you know, one way or the other, the offense got a lot more effective as soon as Peyton Thorne came into the game. So I would like to shout him out as well because, I think I saw enough to be like sort of excited.
Well, hey, that's what we're looking for.
That's a win, I guess.
That's what we're looking for. You know, Rocky will always have the Northwestern win, and I stand
and Michigan.
By.
And Michigan. And Michigan.
Yeah, and I stand by that, not only with the Michigan win, which he literally won the game. Like, he threw he and Ricky White won the game. And he also won the Northwestern game. You know, there's Peyton Thorne can't beat Michigan and Northwestern. I'll stand by that. The way
I agree.
Plays,
this is just like Tyler O'Connor had his moments, Andrew Maxwell had Wisconsin, Rocky Lombardi has Michigan and Northwestern.
Yeah, absolutely, and he should be damn proud. And the reason there needs to be, we think that maybe a chapter will take place flipped here to Peyton Thorne is because, one, head injuries are scary. You know,
yes.
Would like to think that this coaching regime handles it a bit better than the last one. I'm not going to get too far into that, but you know, if there's any reason that Rocky Lombardi has any semblance of, he shouldn't play. And so, but the other reason is, you know, Peyton Thorne, this is a youth movement program right now. And with a game or potentially two to go, then I think you need to provide Peyton Thorne the opportunity to show this team and program what he has, because it's become clear what the program is and has with the current quarterback situation. And again, two big wins there, but you know what the ceiling is. So it's time to see what maybe someone else's ceiling is. And I think that's
well, right. And I think we're still looking ahead, you know, next year.
Yeah.
Assuming things, you know, all things are relative, you know, quote unquote normal. You're probably going to get spring practices. You're probably going to get summer practices. You're probably going to get fall practices. And frankly, at this point in time, you need to be, listen, you're playing for wins and losses, obviously, but you're also really, I mean, listen, they're 2-4. Like, you're not going anywhere. You might get to a bowl game because anybody can make a bowl game, which is cool if they play them. But in reality, you're trying to get guys that might, not even for sure do, but just might have an impact on the rosters to come, as much tick as possible. And listen, Peyton, just to be perfectly clear, Peyton Thorne could very well not be the answer. He might end up starting the rest of the season and never start again. It's very possible. But you owe it to all of the players and coaches and fans and not fans. You don't really owe the fans anything, but you owe it to the players and coaches to find, like you said, find out what you have. And honestly, you've got a guy coming in this fall in Hamp Fay who, if the answer is not Peyton Thorne, clearly, then maybe Hamp Fay is the guy who gets some extra snaps in camp. Maybe you hit the grad transfer market a little harder. You need to set those dominoes up. And I think that's really the moral of what we're talking about and why I think it only makes sense to move forward in that way.
Absolutely. So, you know, we won't spend too much time on Ohio State because, frankly, that is where this program aspires to be. You saw two 100-yard rushers. You saw a wide receiver who went for 139 receiving yards. And the worst part is that Michigan State has a well above average defense, and you may not believe me, but they're 17th best SP plus defense in the country. It may not seem that way, but this defense is, they're not the problem. Ohio State's going to score 45 points a game. That's happening against almost anyone in the country outside of Alabama, and maybe them too, because their defense isn't that great. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of, it's the other side of the ball that I think you need to focus the ire or questions, and they deserve all the questions because they've just been not producing in spades. So, I mean, do you want to keep talking Ohio State, or you want to move on and pretend it never happened?
Only thing I'll say in addition is that I think we still know we've got to run defense. I think to your point, specifically the run defense. Listen, Ohio State broke off three huge runs in this game, and you can't just erase those and pretend it didn't happen. But aside from those three runs, Michigan State held a very, very good offense to under 4 yards a carry. And I think the exciting part about that is Naquan Jones aside, Antoine Simmons aside, obviously two very good players, but a lot of really good functional depth, especially on that front four. Linebacker, a bit of a different story, but I think that's a program thing, and that's something they should be somewhat proud of. So, but that's it. Yeah, I think what you need to do is you look at this game and you say, that's where I want to be. And that's what Ohio State's your measuring stick for better or worse. And LSU's just not there yet.
Long way to go, but some positive momentum on the recruiting front. Maybe we'll have more information on that soon. Specifically in areas that are in need. So let's take a...
You don't say.
I do say. Let's take a stroll around the Big Ten here. One quick shout-out. My Coastal Carolina Chanticleers beat BYU 22-17. Mullets over Mormons, baby. The Chants are real. They should be a top-10 team. They are undefeated. And frankly, my biggest takeaway from this game, beyond Coastal Carolina has the coolest field in the country, teal, is that we can throw out the idea that you need to schedule football games 10 years down the road. Don't need to do it. Every single reason an AD says that they need to schedule football games years out because of logistics and all this bullshit, you don't need to do it. Coastal Carolina and BYU called each other on, I think, Tuesday. And said, hey, you want to play? And guess what? They did. And guess what? It was a really great product. It was good football. It was a great game. Yeah. So I wonder if there's any plus to this football season. If there's like a flex schedule possibility, much in the way we talked about a long time ago about like the Big Ten having kind of like a crossover week where you don't know who it's going to be. Like, why not?
I'm with you.
It just makes too much sense, especially for Group of Five programs who are handcuffed. And what if you could, just like bracket busters in college basketball, you could have in the future Coastal Carolina and Cincinnati call each other up and be like, yo, we got to play each other. If we don't, then neither of us have a chance at a playoff. But if we play each other, maybe that win will bump us up into the fourth spot. You know, like they have to afford themselves that opportunity.
They're just sending out you up texts.
Seriously.
All over the place.
All over. And I am here for it. Austin, let's flip through the Big Ten results. A couple fun ones. Northwestern, Minnesota canceled, as we talked about. Same with Michigan and Maryland. But the games that were played, Nebraska beat Purdue 37-27. But what I want you to focus on is the fact that Rondale Moore had 13 receptions. David Bell, another Purdue receiver, had 10 receptions. And Purdue rushed for -2 yards. And that's pretty awesome.
I mean, that's every like air raid dream come to life. That's like the simulation has gone too far when it comes to passing versus the running of the ball. But personally, I kind of love it. And listen, it's also one of those things where you beg coaches to give your best players the ball as many times as possible, and then they do it, and everyone's like, whoa, that's crazy. But it's like, no, that's exactly what you've all wanted for the longest time. And I'm glad they're doing it at least. At least they're doing something weird and relevant down there in Purdue.
Well, they still lost
to West Lafayette, Purdue.
West Lafayette. They still lost by double digits to Nebraska, which actually, folks,
hear me out.
It's a good thing. Because much like Michigan, they love to feel themselves in these wins. And they like to rewatch those games and say, like, hey, if only this, that, and the other. Like, and they'll keep Scott Cross forever. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, another game. Iowa beat Illinois 35-21. It's exactly what you thought would happen. The most important takeaway in this game is, Austin, is that Iowa is now ranked 19th.
Oh, God. Right? It feels so good. Again, like you said earlier, in these trying times, it's really nice that some semi-sense of normalcy really just, you know, like 18-19 just feels, it's just like a nice little homey thing that Iowa can tuck themselves into and say, ah, yes, we are where we're meant to be. It just feels good.
It's home. Home, it's home is where the heart is, and where Iowa football is home is at 18-19.
Absolutely.
Penn State beat Rutgers 23-7. The Nittany Lions ran the ball 57 times this game, and I'm here for it. I think that's great. That's Big Ten football.
Penn State went full inverse of Purdue's game plan.
Yes. It's a lot of carries. It worked. Again, they won 23-7. Pretty much the score you'd expect. You know, I mean, I don't know. Sure. Yeah, it's exactly what you'd think. The score you wouldn't think is Indiana 14, Wisconsin 6. And here's my takeaway. Oof. Indiana playing with a backup quarterback, Jack Tuttle. Great name. This is 2 years in a row where Wisconsin has talked openly about playoffs and then sucked. Are the Badgers the new Michigan?
Oof. Damning.
Talk about it.
It's a fair question. Yeah, maybe. I mean, Paul Christ has got it. He got to tread lightly, man, because there's a point at which the folks are not going to be happy, and you just keep setting yourself up. Like you said, you know, you can't. The locals are gonna, the natives are gonna get restless here if you don't start cashing in on some of these promises.
7 points against Northwestern, followed up the next week with 6 points against Indiana.
Listen,
it's not like you're playing Ohio State.
No, and here's the other part: like, this is with Graham Mertz out there. Oh, Graham Mertz is like the big flashy guy that you went out and got, and now all of a sudden.
He's like, just another Wisconsin quarterback.
Like, what's up? Is he bad? Are we going to do that? Like, is this what's happening? He might be bad.
Michigan's rubbing off on him. A little bit of too much quarterback hype. They started feeling themselves, and then look what happened. So, tread lightly, Badgers. We got our eye on you. I'm going to play a quick game. Sorry?
I said, you got to be careful. Don't fly too close to the sun.
You don't, you know, stay low. Stay low, Badgers. Trust us on that one. I'm going to play a quick game, Austin, called Playoff Pretender or Contender. I'm going to give you three teams, and you're going to get your responses. This week, we have Cincinnati sets them up nicely with a game at number 24, Tulsa. Time to ask a question. 9-0 Bearcats. Is that better than a 5-0 Buckeyes team? People are talking. What do you think?
No.
Okay. Are they pretenders or contenders?
I'm still going to say they're a contender, if only because there are still games on the schedule to be played. And if they go undefeated, I think you have to listen, but you only have to listen in so far as, did Ohio State win the Big Ten? Is there another Power Five team that's one loss that's a conference champion? Okay. Then yeah, let's, you know, moving on. We've found our guys. So, yeah, I don't know that it's – I don't know. Cincinnati's in a tough spot. I'm going to say contender, but tentative.
Fair enough. Okay, LSU at Florida. Florida's only loss is to Texas A&M, and they get Alabama next week in the SEC championship game. And be careful not to look too far ahead. Let me just point that out. But is Florida a pretender or a contender?
I'm going to say they're a contender. I mean, I think that offense is real. Like, that's Kyle Trask has next Bears quarterback that's good in college and bad.
Oh nice.
So, but he's still in college. So good. Luckily for him, you know, he's going to be good for a little while longer. I think they're really good, man. Kyle Pitts is the real deal. Trevon Grimes. I know they've got Kadarius Toney. I mean, that offense is going to be able to go. Now, whether they can slow down Bama's a whole other question, but I listen. I'm going to watch the game. I'm going to still say they're a contender as well.
Okay, so I think I've said this on the pod before, but I think it's just worth noting. Kyle Trask didn't play didn't start in high school, didn't start a single game in high school, had almost no offers out of high school, and now he's legitimately a Heisman candidate. Over 3,200 yards on the season today. He played behind Derek King, Miami's quarterback, formerly Houston's quarterback, who set Texas high school football records left and right. So I just think that's a fun aside. But I'm going to jump to the last of our three contender pretenders. We have number five, Texas A&M, who hosts Ole Miss this week. And I want to note one thing before I hand it back. SCFS Spartan Seahawk noted to us in the comments of one of the pods, Jimbo Fisher and that reserve national championship trophy is starting to become a possibility. Austin, how much is the replica going to be worth if they won it all? Or is it actually worth more if they never win it all?
I love this question. I'm going to say it's the appeal of what could be will always outweigh if they won it. Like I think the novelty of them never having actually won it would be worth more. I'm never going to take Texas A&M seriously until they do it. So I'm going to say they're a pretender. Like, even though I know Jimbo's been there, done it. That's one I'm not buying until I see it with my own eyes where I'm like, damn, wow, they actually did it. Okay. Just pat them on the back and move on. That's kind of how I feel about A&M.
Well, you know, Texas A&M looking squarely at Florida is the only way they can make it in, really, because this is their, I believe, last game. They might have a reschedule coming up, but they're going to have to backdoor their way into the playoff. But, thank you for the question. And I'm with you on the replica being worth more if they never win, because Texas boosters, they're arch rival. Can you imagine the bidding war for that thing? Like, it would go crazy for it. All right. Quick week 8 schedule for the Big Ten. Illinois at Northwestern, rivalry week on a game that truly doesn't matter because Northwestern's already in the Big Ten West Championship. Frankly, does Northwestern even, like, play their best players? Like, this is people can get hurt. You know, like, I don't know why you would do it. So just my thought.
If it was another school aside from Northwestern, I'd say they might be smart and keep guys out. And even though I know Northwestern is obviously a great school, great education as a Medill grad, I feel like they're too tough guy. They're going to play all their dudes and they're going to play as hard as they can.
Okay.
Or high water.
That's fine.
It's too much of a football guy to do anything else.
I believe it. That's fair. Pat Fitzgerald's name recently floated, I believe, for the Bears job.
what I would give to see that boring ass, terrible style of football come to the Bears and flame out in spectacular fashion. Listen, if we could ruin both the nearby football programs here in one fell swoop, I am. Where do I sign? Like, you just fax me the paperwork. I'm in.
Literally, that's right. Dan Gilbert signing John Beilein away from Michigan and ruining both Michigan and the Cavs simultaneously. Great work.
One stroke of the pen just takes it all down. I'm all in.
All right, Rutgers heads to Maryland this week, which is relevant for only one reason and one reason only, and I'll get to it. Don't even have time for it right now because I just am tired of talking about the fact that they're playing. Minnesota travels to Nebraska. Minnesota openly talking about how undermatched they are in this game because of the number of players they have that will be traveling. Nebraska's 9.5-point favorite. Listen, you might want to go get that right now if what PJ Fleck is saying is true, because they're traveling light this week as far as personnel goes. So, make some money maybe. Indiana takes on Purdue. Indiana, heavy favorite in this one, but they're frankly looking directly at Michigan, Ohio State, because this game won't matter if Ohio State plays, because if they play, they're going to beat Michigan soundly.
Yeah.
The spread opened at 30. for the Ohio State Michigan game.
Oh my God, I hadn't seen that until just now. Wow.
And I'm gonna play.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna play Galaxy Brain for you.
Yes.
Jim Harbaugh said the only way that he could maybe even compete with Ohio State is if they had a week to prepare. So they threw the Maryland game because it didn't matter. And much in the way we needed a week to beat Northwestern to prepare, I'm not saying Michigan has a chance. I'm just saying I think that this was the only way to me even make it competitive. Just my thoughts. What do you think?
I hope it's competitive. No, I really hope it's competitive. I genuinely do, because I just nothing is more enjoyable than the heartbreak. I mean, to watch them get so tantalizingly close and then lose, like have Michigan fans talk themselves into and out of Jim Harbaugh like four times in the same game, is everything I could ever ask for. So, I hope it's like the one from a few years ago where it was like 35-35 in the third quarter, and then it ended up being like 62-38 at the end of the game. Like, if we can get another one of those, again, where do I sign?
Okay, yeah. Well, that is going to be an interesting, fun event.
But in reality, Ohio State is going to beat the brakes. The brakes off of Michigan. 52-12 is not a score that's outside of the realm of possibility.
That seems generous. Wisconsin, Iowa, in the Big Ten game of the week. I think Iowa probably they're the favorite here. I think they seem like the obvious heavy favorite to me. Iowa, I think we said a long time ago, I think I said I thought they were better than Indiana, even with Michael Penix. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. Unfortunately, we'll never know. Because if Iowa wins, they'll probably match up with Indiana in the crossover game. And our said back there, the Maryland-Rutgers game has relevance, and it is only so that if every favorite wins this week, then Michigan State will probably be playing Minnesota in a crossover game. Now, these crossover games aren't guaranteed, and frankly, both teams would have to kind of opt in to them, I believe, and I don't know where they'll be played. That hasn't been decided yet. So just of note, if you're kind of looking ahead to say who could Michigan State be playing after Penn State, if everyone, all the favorites win, it'll be against Minnesota. Now, if all the favorites win and Michigan State upsets Penn State this weekend, then Michigan State will probably end up finishing in fourth place and facing off against Wisconsin in the crossover game. So just, you know, keep that in mind as all this chaos continues to play out. And so that takes us to the Penn State game also. And afternoon game on Saturday, it's Land-Grant Trophy season. I need a little more enthusiasm over there.
You're right. That's my fault. I forgot briefly about the trophy. You're right. Let's go. I'm ready to win. Bring that monster.
Come on, man.
Crap back home.
It's time to bring it back home.
Laser week, baby.
That's right. Penn State opens is about a 14-point fave. Here's the deal. Michigan State's defense can handle their offense. Their offense is not good. Michigan State's defense is I would even say much better than their offense. Where it gets hairy is Penn State's defense is as good as ours. If you haven't been watching, and bless you for it, Michigan State's offense is the worst, the stinkiest. It's bad. So unless something drastically changes, a la Peyton Thorne gets the start and makes a deal with the devil and is just fantastic, then we might have a ball game on our hands, okay? But the good news is it'll probably be low scoring either way, and that's always a recipe for an upset.
Yeah, I mean, and the crazy part is it would still be an upset, despite the fact that Penn State has also only won two games this season. I think you kind of nailed it on the head. The Michigan State defense versus the Penn State offense is not going to be the problem. I mean, Sean Clifford coming into this year was, you know, probably even people saying, you know, sneaky dark horse candidate, has been boo-boo this year. 12 touchdowns, 9 picks,
Yeah.
Not doing a ton on the ground, which he did a little bit previously. And then not only is he not completing a ton of his passes, not only is that happening, they don't have a single rusher over 300 yards. We're seven games into the season. Yeah, they got a little bit of balance, but it's like all bad balance. So is that really balance at all? Some are asking. Either way, the offense versus the defense, the Penn State offense versus Michigan State defense, not going to be the issue for Michigan State. I think they actually have the opportunity, if they're able to make a couple of, you know, kind of win that turnover battle, to really make this, you know, to actually keep this pretty close. It's just a matter of whether they can do anything on the offensive side of the ball. Penn State, and I mean, MSU's lucky. Their best player, one of the best players in the country, their linebacker Micah Parsons opted out of this season. It's probably going to be a top 10 pick, despite being a linebacker. That should tell you how good he is. He's out, but they still have guys like one of my favorite named players in all of the land, Shaka Tony. He is a defensive end. He's got four sacks in seven games. You know, nothing, you know, mind blowing, but still a really good player. And, you know, Michigan State's offensive line improved certainly, but not anything close to a vintage good offensive line. So, yeah, this is a tough test for Peyton Thorne. Going to be honest, if this is what would it be, his second career start at Penn State, not going to be the easiest place. He's lucky nobody's going to be there. This isn't an unwinnable game. You know, it would be a surprise, but it's not an unwinnable game, as it looked at the beginning of the season. Now, John, I have a question for you. Like, knowing what we know, let's say MSU finds a way to win this game, and it's, you know, another close shave like it was against Northwestern. Like, how do you even define this first regular season for Mel Tucker? Because he'd be 3-4. But his wins would be at Penn State, at Michigan, and at home against the top 10 Northwestern team, while his losses are at home against Rutgers, absolute blowouts at the hands of Iowa and Ohio State, and then a shutout at the hands of Indiana. Like, none of that makes any sense to me. Like, all of that is a big, like, quandary. So I'm wondering how do you define that regular season? Just like half or what?
Well, it makes all the sense in the world, much in the way that when we received word, I think back in March, that murder hornets were on their way to the United States, no one flinched. Didn't matter. Nothing can affect me anymore. I'm broke. I accept your chaos and I need it. It's the only way I'm sustained. So to me, thank you, Mel, because your insanity, week to week insanity has brought me warmth in this trying time. I don't know if you can have any takeaways from a year zero in general, but this year zero in particular, you just kind of, you literally throw out, because except for two things, you throw out the fact that when it's bad, it's really bad. You throw it out because I think what you saw is just kind of a lack of talent when the bad is really bad, right?
Yep.
And there's certainly some bad coaching there too. Don't get me wrong. We'll get into that as the season ends, wraps up. But then the other takeaway is the guy does need a little bit of truly time to instill an offense and defensive, like, identity, the playbooks.
Yeah.
As a start. You know, he didn't have the luxury of camp. I think I just kind of throw – these were all exhibitions this year for me, to answer the question.
Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, you kind of can't take anything away from it. If I'm taking one thing away from it, it's the fact that Michigan State beat Michigan. I mean, that's really the only thing that I'm remembering about this year, because I think you're right. I think ultimately the bad was just talent. It's just a talent gap. I don't think any of it is scheme or anything like that. I don't think it's possible to read into that at this point. You're just not as good a team as your competitors at a certain point, especially the Ohio State games. So, but I just think it's interesting, because I think usually with the first year coach, you can kind of say, hey, this lived up to the hype. This let me down in certain areas. But, you know, I think the one thing that I would be looking for moving forward, it'd be crazy. It's just, you know, the thing that's blowing my mind and I think is successful no matter what is we're sitting here 1 week from the end of the season, and this is maybe stretching, but very possibly looking at a Big Ten total season. Now that includes the crossover game. Michigan State could finish 500. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think if they're able to do that, which would mean obviously winning the next two games, which is by no means a given or even likely, I think you have to come away just incredibly excited about what the future could hold for Mel Tucker. And listen, even if he doesn't, even if he loses the next two, you're not going to come away, you know, shocked and disappointed. So it's kind of like a, like you said, at the end of the day, it's kind of all exhibitions at this point. But I'm hoping, you know, personally, I'm hoping that they can get this win this week, because if you're playing for 500 against a team that is in your same place in your division, that's not a undoable thing. So that would be pretty exciting.
MSU seems to have Penn State's number, even when Penn State is more talented. At least we've seen that in more recent years. Yeah, I mean, well, Penn State has gotten a little bit unlucky. I'll put it out there. They're better than their 2-5 record, but they're also they've also had some criminal coaching decisions, not just in game, but the fact that Pat Freiermuth, the number one tight end, I think in the entire class for this coming draft, has only 310 yards receiving is a crime. One touchdown. Yeah. And he's the best player on the field for the offense. They have no running game to speak of, as you mentioned. Sean Clifford and Will Levis, the backup quarterback, are their second and fourth leading rushers. It can't happen. You know, and so I'm just very unimpressed with their offense. And, hey, you don't turn the ball over and you get one finally, you know, a bounce in the right direction for Michigan State. They totally can win this game. I mean, they're not – the talent gap isn't as nearly as severe as Ohio State, but there is a reason it is a 2-touchdown favorite over the Spartans.
Like you said, I think where the talent gap comes in is their defense versus Michigan State's offense. That's going to be a tall task for MSU. But I think that Penn State's the type of team where if you can put 24 points on the board, you've got a real chance at winning. Maybe not even that much. It might genuinely be. Require less. So those are the types of games that MSU actually has a chance of pulling off this year. So we'll see. But either way, just enjoy it. It's more football. It's going to be gone before you know it. So we might not even get bowl games this year. So just enjoy it for what it's worth, and know that you can go into the off season knowing, regardless of the outcome of this season, that better things are on their way, and I think in fairly short order.
Well, and Austin, I'll tell you this. If you watch the game, and even if things aren't going our way, just log on to Twitter, because we'll just start another thread of memes that make us laugh. And
yes,
that got us through the second half pretty much. So we'll be there through all of it.
Yeah, no, misery loves company. So guys, please join us whether things go right or wrong, we'll be there. Anything else, John?
No. I'm ready for a couple of hoops games and a football game, and can't complain.
Yeah, looking forward to some good overreactions here from the entire gang against Virginia. Just try not to get too upset. That's me just giving advice to everybody, because I'll be getting frustrated for all of us. All right, guys, as always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin, and we will catch you later.
See you.